Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, I'm Andy Murray, and you're listening to the Tennis Podcast.
We have just seen Rafael Nadal departing the Rod Laver Arena just a few short moments ago, signing autographs in quite a lot of emotion, actually. He's just been interviewed by Jim Courier after beating Francis Tiafoe in straight sets. It wasn't a particularly competitive match. 6-3, 6-4, 6-2, Tiafoe certainly gave a decent account of himself. Nadal, well, we'll talk about the nitty-gritty of his performance in a minute, but he was superb. But the emotion, where did that come from, Catherine? He was talking to John McEnroe. I was almost taken by surprise by the emotion, but when he was talking us through it, I thought, yeah, I know what you mean now.
Yeah, he kind of had to explain to us all why he felt so emotional about reaching the semi-finals here, because I think we all think, that's Rafael Nadal. You know, what big deal is reaching a Grand Slam semi-final for him? But actually, he's only won the title here once, you know, as we expressed surprise at remembering that the other night.
I said he'd won it twice on air.
Yeah.
Because I was thinking, that can't be right.
Yeah, that one time when
Federer
cried. Well, there's a lot of people that have been guilty of, at the very least, being taken aback by that statistic. You know, he reached the final here a couple of years ago. I think you just think, oh, yeah, Nadal, you know, but actually... you know, his hard court stats in recent years are awful, and awful for largely reasons that have been taken out of his hands, injury-wise. You know, we know that, I think that quote from Nadal about, I fight every single point as if my life depends on it.
Yeah.
Even if he might not say it explicitly, certainly in English anyway, how much it kills him to have to retire from Grand Slam matches. Mm. I think that was the kind of thing that he was expressing tonight in that interview with John McEnroe.
Well,
you know, that he's had to retire from his last two hard court Grand Slams.
And if you go back in the history of this tournament, I remember when Andy Murray, I think the first year Andy Murray reached the final, they played each other in a semi and he had to pull out. Then there was the one where he was playing David Ferrer and he was going to face Murray in the semis and he pulled his hamstring. And then there was the one...
The final against Wawrinka.
Yeah, Wawrinka. I can't remember. It was his back, wasn't it?
Yeah, the semi-final last year.
He got booed by the crowd because they couldn't understand what he was doing.
Yeah, I think we all just think, Rafael Nadal, 17-time Grand Slam champion.
Runs through brick walls.
Yeah, he's barely been troubled here this year. 3-4-2 against Francis Tiafoe. Routine, you know, normal service resumed. Everything is normal, whereas actually for him and for all of us really observing him and invested in him, this is actually a really big deal. And that's great. You don't want them all to be like, yeah, no, water off a duck's back.
Mm.
I'm into another semi-final. This is just what I do. It was lovely.
It was great.
It was really lovely.
Because it followed a crunching performance against Tiafoe, who... I mean, he was just... His whole skill set was negated just by this avalanche of Rafael Nadal intensity and big hitting from the baseline and the angles and the movement, everything he brings. And he found a way to highlight Tiafoe's current shortcomings, which I dare say he will improve, but he has a problem with his backhand and... The worst man in the world to play if you've got a problem with your backhand is a guy who's bounding the ball up high to your left shoulder.
It's such a different backhand to forehand, isn't it, for Tiafoe? You've extracted them from two completely different players. He's got this really flat backhand and this really, like, interesting. We're getting attacked by seagulls.
There are seagulls. We are sitting currently, folks, on a grass hill next to the big screen where we've just seen Nadal beating Tiafo. The floodlights are on. We're still in Melbourne Park, and we are surrounded by about 30 seagulls just having a little... I think these
probably the same seagulls that prevented Joe Konta from moving to court three the other day.
I think they're listeners. That's
They have just suddenly swarmed in.
Yes, they have. So,
but what do we think? What if we're talking about Nadal in terms of being the ultimate exposer of weaknesses? What's he going to expose in Stefanos Tsitsipas?
That's a very good question. Well, I think for a start, he will still try the high looping forehand to the backhand because it's worked for years against Federer, hasn't it? It's only recently that Federer's figured out a way to deal with it, which is just to go all-out attack, flatten it out and smack it as hard as he can early in rallies. I do feel that Tsitsipas could do something similar. I think he has the ability. I'm not sure, tactically, whether he will figure that out quickly enough to be able to beat Nadal, but the way he talks... He talks analytically. He talks as though he's, because he's played him before and he wasn't that far away, that he's going to do his homework, you know?
Yeah, he's not a, I'm just going to play my game and see if that's good enough kind of guy.
Well, you told us the other day, didn't you? You told us about his tactics ahead of Federer.
Yeah, and that was exactly what we ended up seeing on the court. Federer played the match that Tsitsipas wanted to play. And it was interesting, you know, I said at the end of that practice session they stayed beyond their booking. And during that period, they were focusing on, during that extended practice period, they were focusing on serve and return. And on the return, Apostolos Tsitsipas.
Great name.
Father and coach.
Could there be a better Greek name than that?
It's so fantastic. Was making Stefanos drill the backhand return. And for the first 5 minutes, they were hitting the fence. It was dire, and he wasn't quite sulking, Stefanos, but he was like, "Come on, we've done our practice. You know, this isn't going well." But he made him persist. His dad did, until he started finding his range and finding his timing. And I was thinking, surely against Federer, you want to be chipping the return or something, and. Hey, look, that worked. And I'm going to his practice session tomorrow, actually.
Fascinated.
We're hoping to be able to doorstep Apostolos, new best mate, once again. So I will let you know in tomorrow night's podcast.
Apostolos!
What tactics are being planned.
Yeah. See, I remember you saying after the Stefanos Tsitsipas press conference when he was talking about Tommy Robredo, wasn't he? Sort of without,
not by name.
Without naming him. He was referencing the fact that Robredo, a single-handed backhand player, had beaten Federer at the US Open, and that he'd clearly been studying YouTube videos of this. And I just wonder whether, and I know it's not a single-hander, you think of the success that both Djokovic and I'm thinking specifically Murray have had against Nadal by absolutely flattening out and belting backhands at him.
The cross-court in particular.
Yeah.
That angled, knifed cross-court backhand. Mm. Yeah, you're absolutely right. That I remember watching that here, that first semi-final that Murray played against Nadal would have been... It was just before my 2008.
Yeah, 2007 was when Murray played Nadal here.
Right then, that one.
I think that was the one.
Yeah, and he lost Murray, but it was that sort of wow.
It was a light bulb moment.
It was a light bulb moment, and it was a specific sort of tactical light bulb moment because boy did that work.
Yeah.
I wonder. I mean, it's obviously easier to do with the double hander.
Yeah, well, I think the theory
when
is
when it's bouncing up high,
you've got more control, I suppose, over the double hander. That said, Tsitsipas's backhand feels sturdy in a way that Federer's and Sampras's maybe felt like a weakness. It felt of all their shots that felt like a weakness. I still don't think Tsitsipas's backhand is a weakness. However, speaking to Pat Cash today, interviewed Pat today, and he said, I feel that Tsitsipas's backhand return is the problem.
Well, that's what they were working on.
Yeah, he said basically Roger Federer had a source of points on serve anytime he wanted them by going to the back end of Tsitsipas, which I found very interesting because I mean I hadn't seen that, but then you know Pat Cash understands the technicalities of the game.
If we're going to name drop, can I tell you who Mats Wilander thinks is going to win the tournament?
Name drop it will.
He thinks Milos Raonic is going to win the tournament.
Does he?
Yeah.
Based on?
Well, based on what we've all seen.
I mean, he's playing
well.
How well
he's playing, how well he's serving.
But he's never beaten Novak Djokovic in his whole career.
He's never beaten Novak Djokovic in his whole career.
Semi-final opponent, if he gets that far.
I'm not necessarily endorsing this view. I'm also not disagreeing with Mats Wilander. I'm sitting firmly on the fence. But we had a little chat about it earlier, and we were talking about Goran Ivanišević, who obviously Mats knows very well indeed. And he said this thing to me, which I guess, you know, we both know, but sort of, you know, when somebody sort of packages something in words in a way that isn't news to you.
Especially
but
Mats.
Yeah, exactly. He said, Goran feels like he should have won more slams than he did, and he is channeling that sense of regret, that fire in the belly, into Milos Raonic. And I think I said it on the podcast yesterday. I'm losing track of where I've said what, but I hope I said it on the podcast yesterday. I spoke to Milos Raonic after his victory over Zverev. Did I say it on the podcast yesterday?
Yes, you did, yes.
That, you know, he was chit-chat, tennis, and then I asked him about how hard it's been on the sidelines,
yeah,
and suddenly he was
that.
A different guy.
Mm.
You know, that sense of what should have been,
yes.
What could have been, which, as much as Goran's fine because he won that 2001 Wimbledon, you know, he's not losing sleep,
yeah.
But equally, he knows the feeling of what could have been.
And it never happened for him here. He used to get hot and bothered here. He didn't like the heat, Goran. It's quite funny watching him courtside these days. I mean, he feels like he's crossing everything. And he's just permanently...
He's such a sort of cool dude. He's so uncool courtside,
he
isn't
is
he?
Sitting there. He's just clenched, isn't he? I'm going to tell him that tomorrow. Stop being clenched, Goran.
He can't.
Yeah, he can't. He lives it. He feels it so deeply.
He would never use the sort of Agassi Dimitrov-y vocab,
no,
would he? He'd never be...
Gives it to you straight.
But it's the same sort of thing, isn't
it? Oh, yeah.
It's I live and breathe every point with you.
Yeah, no, he cares deeply about it. Just to go back to... Nadal, we've got some people in front of us dancing because they think they're on camera. They don't understand. It's an audio podcast and that doesn't work.
They're waving.
So stop being silly,
they're
folks.
They're all waving. Oh,
what I wanted to say was the performance of Tsitsipas against Bautista Agut today. Let's just talk about that briefly. I was enormously impressed because it's so difficult to back up a breakthrough win like that, isn't it? And we've seen it so many times. I go back, I think, 24 years ago when Mark Philippoussis thrashed Pete Sampras in a way that we'd never seen before. He threw him around like a rag doll. He absolutely... What was the word that Sam Briggs used? Sploshed him off the court. And I thought we had the next great champion on our hands. And in the next round, he got sliced and diced by Mark Woodford in high heat and just clever tennis, made it difficult and beat Philippoussis in straight sets. In 2001, we talked about how Roger Federer beat Pete Sampras. Well, he lost in the next round to Tim Henman. This stuff happens a lot. And Tsitsipas came out today and he's playing a guy who you have to beat. You cannot wait for unforced errors.
No shortcuts.
He was a breakdown. Managed to win the first set, still had to endure losing the second set. Bautista Agut playing well still, being the human metronome that he is. And I know that's, people might think that's a criticism. And I know what you might mean, but it's meant to be a compliment.
If it gets the job done, it wins you matches.
How'd you beat this guy? And that's what Tsitsipas had to work out.
That's what Djokovic has done for...
Yeah.
You know, one of the greatest of all time.
And he's the ultimate.
He's
the ultimate of that game. But Tsitsipas found a way, whether it was by... I mean, sometimes he was throwing... He started to throw different looks at him all the time, a bit like how John McEnroe used to say, you will not see the same ball twice in a row. And when once Tsitsipas had worked that out a bit, it started to turn in his own direction. Plus the guy's nerve. I mean, the sheer nerve he has to not doubt himself the way that...
It's unreal.
I mean, and it does make that contrast with Zverev so stark that Zverev has yet to be able to do that on this stage.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I really think... He sat in that press conference the other night after beating Federer, and everyone was asking him about the changing of the guard. He was asked about it on court, wasn't he? It was John McEnroe, wasn't it?
Was
it John McEnroe, yeah. And, you know...
I think it was Jim Courier today, wasn't it?
It was to Jim Courier today, but the other night it was McEnroe, I think. And you know, he was even mentioned in press, that 2001 Sampras-Federer match, and he didn't sort of balk at it, because that's a match that he's had on his... on his YouTube playlist for a long time. You know, he didn't sort of... A lot of time they say, oh, it's not changing the guard. I'm a different player, different circumstances. He was like, yeah, I'm aware of that match. that's very much on my horizon. And it would have... And he knew that it wasn't a free pass today. It was, in many respects, the opposite of a free pass, because suddenly everyone's expecting him to win. But... in the context of those 2001 Sampras-Federer comparisons, it was, because we all know that Federer went on to lose that match, and Federer still became the man that he is. And when he's a breakdown in that first set, when he's a set apiece, you know, at all of those moments, it all could have got on top of him mentally. It really could, because it was a little bit flat, the atmosphere in Rod Laver Arena for that match.
First match of the day, isn't it?
As it often is for the first match, it was really hot today. The atmosphere out here was good, because that's where all the opportunistic Greek fans were, you know. But these matches, quarterfinals onwards, pretty much, they're sold out in advance. So the ticket holders inside bought their tickets months ago, not knowing that, you know, it was going to be a Greek guy playing. So most of the Greek fans were out here. So... it was a bit flat. He was a bit physically flat. It would have been so easy to sort of capitulate a bit, and he did anything but that. And wow, that is impressive. It in many ways, it's more impressive than what he did against Federer the other night.
What about this match against Nadal? We're going to talk about the women's quarterfinals that we've had today in a moment. We may end up talking about Nadal Tsitsipas tomorrow, but I just want to touch on it briefly. What do you think? I think he can have a fight with Nadal. I think he can go toe to toe with him. I think we could be in for five sets.
I think so too. Yeah, I think I have to edge Nadal at the moment.
Yeah, so do I.
I'd be really surprised if it wasn't a tussle.
Yeah, I'd be surprised if Tsitsipas didn't show up.
Yeah. He's showing up.
The serve
he
out wide, the serve out wide, and the hooked forehand could make it very hard for him to compete.
Yeah.
But he just gives you this sense of confidence that he's going to find a way, doesn't he?
Yeah.
And
you're not waiting for him to miss or for the penny to drop.
Do you know, I was so relieved when he said he's not going to cut his hair in the interview afterwards. Because I just look at him and I think, you know, I'd love to be that cool. Sort of have the hair, have the
ball
hair.
Well, it's interesting you said, I was having a chat on WhatsApp with my brother about this. Math thinks he's so uncool that he's cool.
Yeah. He doesn't give a toss. That's why he's cool.
He doesn't give a toss, but he was talking about his return of serve stance and comparing it to the strokes and the way they held their guitar. And I can see you looking at me in a way that this conversation has no future.
I'm just interested.
But he said, you know, throughout the 90s, Nirvana, etc., the trend was hold your guitar as low as possible, even though that's not the most fruitful or efficacious way to hold your guitar.
Efficacious. What a great word.
But they all did that. And then the strokes came along and they held their guitar You know, it's like, do you remember when you were at school and the cool thing was to have the straps in your backpack as loose as possible?
You and I were at school at different times, Catherine. Me,
well,
20 years
earlier. Well, when I was at school,
earlier.
The cool thing was to have to cause yourself back trouble by having the straps on your backpack as loose as possible. And then, you know, Tsitsipas is the guy coming along going, guys, I'm preventing myself back trouble by wearing my backpack in accordance with, yeah, you know, the National Back Pain Association guidelines.
Yeah.
And check me out. Not having back pain is cool.
I'm cool in my own way. And my backpack method, as a seagull, has just dropped on my head. This has happened, folks. They are flying about. They must, if looking up into the black sky.
Is it really?
Here, yeah.
Hang on, can you lean?
Looking up into the black sky, there are hundreds of seagulls, and one of them has just deposited some love upon my head.
Apparently, it's good luck.
Yeah. So, anyway, what was I going back to? Backpack.
Anyway, it didn't really go anywhere. But no, do you know what I mean? The coolest thing is to not care about being cool, right?
Yeah,
He's that.
Yeah. I mean, I would have. You know, cultivated my own backpack methods, except that...
Yeah, but only certain people can pull it off.
No,
I wore my backpack high on my shirt, and everyone was like, oh, who's that?
Can I finish my point? In 1986, Catherine, people didn't have backpacks. They had briefcases, right?
Is that true?
It's true in my school. Right, okay, on we go.
Things are weird in Birmingham.
Yeah, Tsitsipas against Nadal. We'll do predictions tomorrow, but we both think five sets is where we're going.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Hello, Tennis Podcast listeners. David here. Now, you might know that I love a bit of cooking, and I think I'm quite good at it. But if I'm honest, even I get fed up trying to work out what to do every night. That's where Home Chef comes in. Being able to put together a delicious meal without the long prep and the cook times, well, that's pretty cool. Home Chef provides fresh ingredients and chef-designed recipes conveniently delivered to your doorstep to simplify your cooking experience. They have over 30 options a week and serve a variety of dietary needs, so you don't have to worry about what to make ahead of time. Not only is it convenient, but it's economical too. Home Chef customers save an average of $86 per month on groceries. Now, for a limited time, Home Chef is offering Tennis Podcast listeners 18 free meals plus free dessert for life and, of course, free shipping on your very first box. Go to homechef.com/tennis. That's homechef.com/tennis for 18 free meals and free dessert for life. You heard it right. We've had a fantastic couple of matches on, I don't know, in terms of an experience in a way. I mean, Kvitova was so destructive against Barty. It was a disappointing match. It wasn't a contest. She prevented it from being a contest. And I feel for Barty because she's so likeable. And you're drawn to her, aren't you? And she's a wonderful player, but she was not given a chance tonight. But it's so uplifting to see Kvitova when she plays like that. I know the Australians wouldn't have enjoyed it, etc. But it's a wonderful sight. There's nothing quite like it in women's tennis. Maybe Serena Williams when she's on. But it's just still a different look, isn't it?
I'm match-wise, I'm not sure either of the women's matches today were brilliant, but there were uplifting elements to both of them. I thought, you know, okay, Collins Pavlyuchenkova was it was a bit like Svitolina Keys yesterday in that it sort of looked good scoreboard wise and it was very competitive towards the end of that second set. But actually, neither of them played really well at the same time. It wasn't really high-quality stuff.
But I kind of enjoyed them both. They're both these matches.
Yeah, exactly. I did too. But I didn't enjoy them in the same way that I enjoyed Serena and Halep last night.
No, it was different, wasn't it?
But, I mean, see all the things that I said 2 days ago about Danielle Collins. Wow. She's brilliant. And I'm getting a bit tired of people sort of being a bit dismissive or critical of traits in her that I see as pretty similar as traits in Tsitsipas that are, and plenty of other male players that are being really celebrated, like, oh, she's so confident and sure of yourself and in your face. And yeah, she is in your face. She's undoubtedly in your face, but confident, sure of yourself and all the rest of it. She is in a Grand Slam semi-final. She's never won an Australian Open match before. She beat the world number two, Love and Two. I'd be sure of myself. If you can't be sure of yourself then,
honestly, though,
then when can you?
Catherine, I love it. I love all that. I just love
so
it.
Do
the
I.
fact she does not give a stuff what anybody thinks.
Brilliant.
Comes out and tells everybody what she's going to do to them.
Yeah.
And how much...
There's no side to it, is there? She's not pretending to be anything else.
No.
She's like, I'm here to win tennis matches, guys.
Yeah. I mean,
this works for me.
There will be lots of people who do not like Danielle Collins over the years to come. When they watch her play, she'll rub them up the wrong way. She's too blunt. She's too loud. She's too in your face, all the rest of it.
But I would urge all of those people, maybe, you know, gender aside, that's not your cup of tea. And there will be people, and fine. But I would just urge those people to maybe just stop and think, hang on a second, are these things that I'm not liking in her things that I would possibly see slightly differently in a male player? Because I believe
there
is a lot of that around.
Yeah, there definitely is. But also, yeah, I mean, I think there definitely is. But at the same time, I like the fact that people end up having an opinion one way or the other about a player like that, who is prepared to just not toe the line and be all cosy.
She's prepared to do whatever she needs to do to win tennis matches.
And I mean, just to bear in mind, she's up against Pavlyuchenko, who was playing blooming well in that, and you know, it took a right old turnaround for her to win that match.
It could easily have been Collins that went to pieces because she failed to serve out that. She was a set down. She got blasted away in that first set by an incredibly talented player in Pavlyuchenko. Yeah. Never been past a Grand Slam. I think she's reached the quarters of three, if not all four, of the slams, but never beyond. Never been to a semi before. She was completely outplayed in the first set, and Danielle Collins then got up in the second, failed to serve it out, and they're back on terms at 5-5, and it could have all gone to pieces from there. And actually, it was Pavlyuchenkova that went to pieces in the deciding set. So she's hard as nails.
And she, you know,
Danielle
what?
Collins, and
serving
I love it.
It out, we were talking about it in commentary. I suddenly looked up the prize money. And I said, you know, this game right here is worth £250,000 if she wins it. Because that's, you double your prize money by getting to the semi-finals. It was either $400,000+ Australian dollars for losing in the quarters and $900 to lose in the semis.
And I think sometimes we're a bit dismissive about the money because it seems a bit crass to talk about the money in tennis. You know, these people are by and large already multimillionaires, and you don't you don't want to think of them in terms of seeing the paycheck on the finishing line, and therefore we don't want to talk about it in those terms. But when you know it's someone that isn't seeing that paycheck in terms of Ferraris,
that's a life changer, really.
Exactly.
Because she's put herself through college with her family's support, but she's the only one who did from that family, and she didn't come from a privileged background. And I mean, you heard about Frances Tiafoe the other day saying, I've wanted to change my life and my family's lives, and that's what I've been able to do. That's why you got so emotional. And you know, she's going to have that opportunity the way she's going, so more power to her. It's a fantastic story, and I love watching her play personally, and it's going to be.
Wasn't
very
much aggro with Pavlyuchenkova though, was there?
No, I mean, there was no. I think
it wasn't the warmest handshake I've ever seen, but in terms of during match aggro.
No,
it was
bit of a
disappointing on
yeah,
the David Hall front.
We'll have some of that in the future. She won't have it against Petra Kvitová. Petra's too nice.
Too nice.
Yeah,
she's just lovely. Isn't she?
I mean.
Gritty, very
emotional
lovely.
Moment in the interview with Jim Courier at the end when he said, did you, given all you've been through, did you think that this might never happen? I think it was the kind of thing he said over the last 2 years. And she was at that point very emotional.
She had her racket hand sliced open.
If you hadn't heard that story, she was attacked in her own apartment by somebody she didn't know, somebody who broke in, attacked her with a knife. She tried to defend herself and she got her racket hand terribly badly cut.
She still doesn't have full sensation
in
her racket hand. She still can't fully form a fist.
Initially, it was about saving her hand, let alone her career.
Of all the stories, and there are so many, and I think because it's not quite fresh at the moment, you know, she came back incredibly quickly. The French Open 2017, and at that stage it was just, oh my goodness, I'm happy to be here. And then she had that incredible 2018 where, you know, she rose back to the top five in the rankings. She won, I think, 5 titles, but actually, by a quirk of Petra Kvitová, didn't do anything at the Grand Slams.
I mean,
much to David Law's disappointment.
I mean,
it's like, you know, we've all been through all of the Petra Kvitová. And when I think of her, I think of, yes, there was her French Open comeback, and that was all lovely, and I can't in the moment remember. She had a surprise victory in the first round over somebody, I can't quite remember. And it was all this wonderful story and everything was a bonus for her. And then she went to Wimbledon and suddenly people are saying, Petra Kvitová, she's a 2-time Wimbledon champion. And No, I'm talking about 2017.
No, I picked her to win that one as well.
And she ended up having what I would call a panic attack on court against Madison Brengel. And suddenly it was like, hang on a second, this stuff, as much as she might be a total superhuman, this stuff does not go away. This will be with her probably forever. And it's something she's living with. It's not something she's got over. So I think maybe we'll need to check ourselves a bit with Petra Kvitová. Yeah. And it, maybe similar to Rafael Nadal, although very different circumstances, not take it for granted.
And I know it's not about me.
but she's let why is she doing it now?
I mean, she could have done this at the US Open or Wimbledon when I'd predicted her to win the title.
Well, I feel the same. I looked at that prediction sheet and I thought, well, David's been made a fool of.
Thanks.
I don't want to be, you know.
I had a high opinion of Petra Kvitová until then. Anyway, I've got over it, folks, as you can tell. Tomorrow. So, Naomi Osaka at 11 o'clock start tomorrow, Catherine. Naomi Osaka against Alina Svitolina. Who's winning?
Osaka, I think.
Okay.
I think we are going to get Osaka, Serena, semi.
Yeah, I think I'll go Osaka as well. I actually had a good chat with Andrew Bettles, Alina Svitolina's coach today. Lovely guy and great coach he's turned into, and doing a really good job with Svitolina. But yeah, she's been there and done it, Osaka, so I'll have to go for that. We're not going to give you any more predictions because the rest of them are going in the newsletter, which you need to subscribe to, folks. Catherine, Grandmatter, myself.
They?
Yes, they are. Grandmatter and I do one every day. And I got Daniel Collins right today. Excellent.
I find that annoying because I thought Daniel Collins was going to win, but I didn't consider that a notable prediction, so I didn't submit it.
That's a cop out. I just said it first and got in there, and you couldn't take it anymore because I'd already got it. So there we are. The rest of the day, not before 1 o'clock local time, is Serena Williams against Karolina Pliskova. Then we've got Miloš Raonic against Luka Puig. And then in the evening session is Djokovic against Nishikori, with the doubles of Sam Stosur and Zhang Shuai against Strizova and Vondrousova. How about this on the Margaret Court Arena tomorrow? Hébert and Mahou against the Bryan brothers. Oh, isn't Bob Bryan doing well with his old hip?
Yeah, I tell you what, we should talk about that some more. Not tonight, but I mental note.
Yeah, mental note.
And vocal note that we will
come
we will
back
talk
to
about
Bob Bryan.
That, I promise,
yeah, because
that's amazing.
It is amazing. We're just about done for tonight, folks. As I said, newsletter. Go and read Grad Matt's blog, which he's been doing every day here from Melbourne, telling you all sorts of stories. This one, let's just see what Grad Matt is talking about today, because I haven't had a chance to have a sort of chapter and verse
tennis
read of it. Yeah, but there's definitely tennis. He's been talking about the coaches' press conference, which I was quite fascinated by. I wanted to know, because they've just started doing this on the WTA circuit, getting the coaches in for press conferences. So we've had Sasha Buy-in. We've had Patrick Mouratoglou, because he never gets a chance to talk usually. Stop laughing, Catherine. He's also talking about Linar, is Grad Matt in the blog today. She was here inducted into the International Tennis Hall of Fame. And he's also got a little Q&A going with our listeners. Hey, Grad Matt. Yeah, go on, son. There's our Instagram page, in which we've got pictures of seagulls all over it because we've just been taking them, and we are
shat on by them.
Yeah. Catherine, we're together. Yes, that's happened. And other things. What else have I got to say? Yes, the blog, newsletter, Instagram. Tell your mates about the tennis podcast, right? If you see people, random people in the street who like tennis, or if you go to tennis, or if you're going to play tennis, tell them about the tennis podcast. Get them to listen so we can all join in together. And we'll be back again tomorrow. We'll see you then.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hey folks, it's Mark Maron from WTF. I've been talking to all kinds of famous people in my garage since 2009, including a sitting president.
You know, I don't imagine you were flying in here on the chopper thinking like, you know, I am nervous about Mark.
No, I wasn't.
Okay, well, that's good.
That would be a problem.
It would be a problem.
If the president was feeling stressed about
coming to my garage.
Coming to your garage.
And now there's even more WTF when you subscribe to the full Marin to get weekly bonus content and all WTF episodes ad-free. Listen to WTF wherever you get podcasts and subscribe to the full Marin at go.acast.com/WTF.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.